Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show, Jasminder. Hello, Peter.
Hello.
Hello. Namaskar.
Hello. Hello, guys. Hello, sir. Mm-hmm. Nice to have you here on our show.
Same here.
Thank you for your time, Jasminder. Finally, we have someone from the Indian continent. So because we had a red Japanese and Chinese and a lot of American, now we have a different continent with a big history in archery. And I hope Jasminder can tell you a little bit about the history and all the fairy tales and Arjuna and whatever. But first of all, would you like to introduce yourself that we get to know you a little better, Jasminder, please?
Well, I am Jasminder. I am 47 years old.
Mm-hmm.
By profession, I am a lawyer.
Okay.
And I am working to promote traditional archery in India.
Mm-hmm.
To drive it, because we have a great history mm-hmm. in archery.
Yep.
And moreover, I am very much fond of archery from my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to make some bows in my childhood. Then I came for, I just, one day I just looked into the mirror and mm-hmm. hit on the face of my sister. So mm-hmm. after that, I was a bit hesitated, but in the year 2007, I bought a bow mm-hmm. and I started archery doing again.
Oh, very
and
good.
After that, when my limbs were, my limbs of my bow were broken. Mm-hmm. So I again went to see the market that mm-hmm. how can I get the bow again?
Yeah.
And it is, I was not that lucky because in India, we don't have open market for bows and arrows.
Mm-hmm.
I found very difficult to get bow.
Yeah.
Because most of the sports shops, they keep other items, not the bow and arrows.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, so I explored the Google, I explored the net, and then I came to know that, yes, the bow I really needed is a traditional bow because I love traditional archery.
Mm-hmm.
Although I started with a very different kind of bow and I was not aware about the technicalities of all the archery techniques and other things, but mm-hmm. slowly, gradually I took up all those things and mm-hmm. and I bought traditional bows, three mm-hmm. traditional bows
okay.
from online after of course after watching your videos Armin's video the reviews and mm-hmm. And somehow some of the other people also inspired me
mm-hmm.
that I should start making my own bows also and promote the traditional archery. I just started my video channel also.
That's on YouTube. Very good. Yeah, you do now already bow reviews and everything. Very good. I'm so proud of you, Jasminder.
Yeah, thank you.
That you promote it, because most people don't think about the traditional archery. They only know this Olympic Fita style with the sport recurve yes. bows and you know, three finger. And when you see the history in India, you know, with Dhanurveda, how do you pronounce it properly, the art of archery? There's this book, Dhanurveda.
It is Dhanurveda.
Dhanurveda, exactly. Dhanurveda. And when you see what vast amount of information is in it and how different it is to this modern way of shooting, it's incredible.
Actually, Dhanurveda is our Indian book of war science. Mm-hmm. It is not only about bow and arrow. There mm-hmm. are many other weapon techniques and formations, etc. Of the war okay. formations.
It's war formations.
Yes. So those are mentioned in Dhanurveda.
Mm-hmm.
Those are been written 3000 BC mm-hmm. ago, more than 3000 BC, and yeah. With holy sages have compiled all those.
Mm-hmm.
They have documented all mm-hmm. their experience in that Dhanurveda.
Okay.
So, there are many different kinds of Dhanurveda. So the main book is was compiled by all of the other holy saints.
Mm-hmm.
So they teach also, and they write down their experiences also in those in their own Dhanurveda.
Mm-hmm. But you, when you started archery, you didn't have an instructor or something when you were a kid. When how old were you when you started shooting bow and arrow?
Initially, I was just 7-8 years old, mm-hmm. because we have a tradition here in India. Mm-hmm. We have a festival of Dashehra,
mm-hmm.
that is connected to Ramayana. You would have heard that it is a old Indian epic, and in the festival of Dashehra, my father or many people, they used to buy a small bamboo mm-hmm. bow to their children, so that they symbolically.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That is a symbol of that festival. So, mm-hmm. But I thought that now, if anybody want their ward, their children to get into archery, they should provide them a good bow, mm-hmm. so that they get a good experience.
Yeah.
Not that small symbolic bow. That what I am now promoting, that if you want to give your child a real experience of mm-hmm. archery, so that he get interested in it, you should buy a good bow, good yep. quality bow.
Yep.
And he will gain interest in it, and he or she will do the good mm-hmm. archery.
Yep.
Then only it can be promoted.
Exactly. Very good.
And moreover, all the gods and deities here in which are worshipped here, they all are carrying bow and arrows.
Yeah.
So how this is the Indians are connected with bow and arrows, because the devas or deities to which they worship, they are carrying those weapons. Mm-hmm. The bow and arrow is one of the weapon in their hand.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I really appreciate, because I think your religion, the Sikhs, are very connected to weaponry, to daggers, yes. to swords, to bow and arrow, to every kind of weaponry. And I saw on your profile that you have a special weaponry worship day. The Sikhs. Yes,
yes. Nice.
Yeah, yes. Very nice, yes. Very nice.
That is the culture. That is our culture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is a warrior culture, no?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I'd say. Sikhs are called warrior saints.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Great. And I don't know if it's true, but here around, you know, here are also Sikhs in Germany and in Europe, mm-hmm. and they say they can't go on the street without a knife or mm-hmm. a dagger or some kind
that
of.
That is called Kripan, and that is our religious symbol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is a religious symbol mm-hmm. that is given by our guru to us, and that is called Kripan.
Mm-hmm.
It is to save humanity. It is a symbol to save humanity.
Okay. Cool.
Not to attack someone.
Mm-hmm. And is it also connected, because back then in our Middle Ages and ancient times, it was the attribute or the sign of a free man to be able to carry a weapon, a dagger or a sword or something.
Mm-hmm.
Is it something to do with that idea?
No. That is actually our religion. It is a religious symbol mm-hmm. for us. So it started when Mughals were here mm-hmm. and we were countering Mughals.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So Sikhs were the only people who countered Mughals very very finely. And there were other religions, regions also, where other dynasties were fighting with Mughals. But in our area, which is northern India, the Punjab mm-hmm. area, they fought with Afghans and Mughals.
Mm-hmm.
So the Sikhs and Rajputs, mm-hmm. they were very much fighting with Mughals, and mm-hmm. they were even Sikhs were contemporary to Mughals.
Mm-hmm.
And the Mughals, they came from a different country, no? So they were not the original rulers of India, but they came from other countries. And I saw a kind of documentary it was for the British, it was like easy to get India because the Mughals cooperated with them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The British said, okay, you stay Mughal, everything is okay, but we make the business also. And so they were not very interested in so they stayed the rulers and everything was okay. And is this true? Kind of? I don't know.
Actually, that time when Britishers came, Mughals were very weak.
Yeah,
were,
yeah.
That were tail enders of Mughal period when they came and they started their company, East India Company.
Yeah.
They entered with the name of a company and they slowly and they got a approval from Mughal Emperor that they can do business in India and they can apply some rules there, some regulations. And they kept on showing all that approval to that certificate to each and every small kings. And they started grabbing the territory also by getting help from United Kingdom.
But the question, because if the Mughals came from different countries or from outer India, why they could erect such a reign, such a regime above the Indians? Is it because the Indians were different little tribes and so they could rule them, or how?
No attacker could have made their territory in India without the help of Indians.
Without what?
Help of Indians itself.
So
Indian kings have some of the Indian kings, due to their political rivalry, they invited Mughals into the India.
They helped
them to stabilize there.
And different tribes helped the Mughals, and so because they were not one tribe, all the Indians. No,
no, there were always a political rivalry between the kings. There were a lot of kings in India, small territories. It was divided in small territories, and the main the dynasty always reigned at New Delhi, in Delhi. So that is called Delhi Sultanate, or the main capital of India, whatever you can say right now. So the people from outside world, they always used to come here with the help of our own kings, who due to political rivalry, they invite them and they help them and to save their own.
Yes.
So this happened. This is the irony of Indian.
If you think about it, it's kind of like the same with the Americas or with Africa. There were different tribes which were in warfare against each other, and so an invader had a very easy game to say, okay, help us to defend your neighbors, and then you're with us, and so on. Like that, is this right?
Yes, yes. It was somehow like that. But Mughals were not able to conquer complete India. Never. There was always fightings and wars with them, with the local kings. Only Britishers came there and they ruled India in complete manner.
And if correct me if I'm wrong, but I think even today there are some Mughals in some areas and so on, where the government, the real government, hasn't to say a lot because there are local rulers and so on. No. Are you sure?
yeah. Sure. It's not like that. Not now.
Yeah. And you are in the very north of India, no?
Yes, I'm in north of India.
Yeah, close to Bhutan and all Afghanistan and Pakistan, close to these areas,
yes.
No?
Yes, yeah. I'm from Punjab. It is in northern India and near Pakistan and near Bhutan also. Bhutan is far away. I have been to Bhutan in 2019 in traditional archery competition also. I was a participant there. Where Hungarians and Nepalese government has made this that competition happen.
Mm-hmm.
So nice. I was the only Indian who participated there.
Okay, nice, very good.
Jasminda, I'm always fighting with the people verbally because of the term traditional archery.
Mm.
Because nowadays it's called, everything is traditional archery.
Yeah.
And the difficult point is tradition from where or from which time.
Yeah.
Because as far as I know, there was no such thing like traditional archery, no such term, before they invented the compound bow in the United States. So the term traditional archery stems from the late 60s, let's say, and it was only invented to separate the compound bow shooters from the, you know, long bow and recurve and everything. So if we say Olympic archery isn't traditional, that's not true. It's more traditional than
tradition
they thought back then.
Yeah.
So it's an... Yeah, but we know what is meant by the term.
In India, we call it Dhanurvidya.
Dhanurvidya. Maybe historical archery would be the better term.
Classical
but it's not really.
Yeah, but from which time?
Yeah, of course. Which time?
Yeah. And
from Vedic period. We call it from Vedic period.
Yeah.
In India, when Vedas were written, and it has started.
Mm-hmm.
It is... what we say that in Indian culture, it was from Vedic period. And in Vedic period, now I have also learned that Assyrians, Assyrians were basically from Kashmir of Kashmir part.
Mm-hmm.
That I have learned that Assyrians were from Kashmir part. Here we call them Asurs.
Mm-hmm.
So Assyrians, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Assyrians. And they went from Kashmir when they were being fought by Aryans.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Aryans pushed them to Mesopotamia, to Iran. Mm-hmm. And there they established their kingdom.
Okay.
So this was from, that was in the last, we say that on a, before 3000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Aryans even came to Germany.
Yes.
Adolf made sure, yes.
It is this is also known.
Yeah.
That they came from Central Eurasia.
Okay.
Let me interrupt you there. You know, I'm a lot in history and religions and so on, and there's even a kind of conspiracy theory that because we don't know a lot about Jesus Christ, when we know something about him when he was a child, and we know nothing till he was 30 years old, and there's a conspiracy he went to India to the big masters, to the big gurus. And there he got his wisdom from. You ever heard about that?
Yeah, I haven't heard that, but I know that India once India was a Vishwaguru, that we say that it is a teacher of the world. So we had some universities like one Texas Shila. It is called Texla also, and there were some more universities in Central India. So, but those, all the universities were burned down by the attackers and invaders. So we lost a lot of our textbooks, and even the Dhanurveda was vanished in that fire. So, and most of the, from all over the world, the people used to come here to studies, and then they get, and they take the knowledge and they implement in their regions, their countries.
Yeah,
so this was there because India is one of the most ancient civilizations in India.
Yeah, I'm quite sure there's no discussion about that. That Hinduism is kind of the oldest religion on earth. I don't know, and that's why I want to ask you, Jasminda, what is the difference between Hinduism and Buddhism and the Sikh religion, not too detailed, but just to have an idea about the difference.
Hinduism is a way of life of this region. It is a culture, basically. Mm-hmm. It is a culture. You cannot say it is a big religion. It is a culture.
Okay.
Many kind of rituals are there that is related to Hinduism, and that has been adopted in Buddhism also and in mm-hmm. Sikhism also. Sikhism is Sikhism and Buddhism both derived from that emerged from India only. And it has been very vastly adopted by the people of India.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Buddhism and Sikhism also.
Okay.
And we say that if we call about Sikhism, Hindus, mostly more of the Hindus were adopted Sikhism. It is a faith. Mm-hmm. Sikhism is a faith, and it emerged during the Mughal period.
Mm-hmm.
If I say about Sikhism, Buddhism was ancient. There was Buddhism, there was Jainism. These are all tributaries of Hinduism, Indian
mm-hmm.
culture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Earlier, in Hinduism, there were Shaiv, there were Vaishnavs, the one who used to worship Vishnu,
mm-hmm.
one deity, and the one who used to worship Shiva,
mm-hmm.
Lord Shiva. Earlier there were two, Shaiv and Vaishnav. Then there were Buddhism, and there were then thereafter Jainism. So these all are tributaries of Hindu culture, Hinduism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Thank you.
Now you learn something, huh? Yeah.
That's a culture show, as you see.
Yeah, this is. Yeah. People always complain that we talk a conspiracy. We have so much knowledge here, you know, and so much educational stuff.
And you know, I really enjoy to have persons from different countries and continents to ask them directly about their opinions and their behaviors and their religions, and so that's wonderful.
Yeah. You get it unfiltered. Yes, you get it directly from there and not through a book or through whatever a YouTube video. Makes sense. Yeah.
And Jasminda, one more question. Because you said archery is very connected to Hinduism and Buddhism and also Sikhism. And are there no remains from that British archery culture in India? Because they were a long time there, and I'm sure they had their archery clubs and so on.
Actually, during British and Mughal last period, it was the gun culture came.
Mm-hmm.
But they did it not for sports, like polo or like, you know.
Polo was played here. No, the kings, that was the game of kings. Mm-hmm. Polo used to play.
Was
there.
Yeah.
Okay. There were many other games like kabaddi and everything. Mm-hmm. Malkham, kabaddi. The Indian games were there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It was that we say
hello.
Archery or dhanurvidya. It was a vidya. Means it was a subject of learning during it was a subject of weapon.
Now what Peter meant is, because the British Empire ruled for so long, and they always shoot always the English longbows, and he thought maybe that even they came to India and they set up some archery ranges and shot the longbows there.
No.
That
didn't happen.
I like the Mughal bow more than the English longbow.
Mughal was the latest bow, Mughal, which remained in India.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Indian bow makers were very much good in iron smithing and making iron bows.
Steel bows. Yeah, I wish I could have one of these steel bows. They even said in Pakistan they had a lot of these steel bows. Yeah, I wish to shoot one, but they said it's not very comfortable to shoot.
Yes, basically those were not like war bows. Those were
ceremonial
bows. Yeah. Okay.
Yes, those were ceremonial
bows. Mm-hmm. Nice. Very good.
But you know, you know, they had, not in the ancient times, but they had steel bows made in where in Norway or somewhere in the youngest days.
Mm-hmm.
The company was called Seafarb. They made steel bows.
Nice. I don't know. Yeah. Why not? I mean, springy steel should work.
Yes, now here also people make spring steel bows, but those bows are not that comfortable. I have shot with those bows, but
shakes your teeth out. Yes.
One time,
and they used to tie what we say iron cable.
Iron cable, not a string. Yeah, fully metal.
Jasminda, I once had a very nice story. Or not so nice story, I don't know. And it was when the British were here in India, they had a lot of native soldiers, the sepoys and so on. And they had that British rifle, you know, it's like how is it called? I don't know, that kind of Enfield rifle, I think. Mm-hmm. And it was like the Sharps rifle, you know, a kind of block you put in a cartridge and close it and then and so on. And they invented a new type of cartridge, and it was wrapped in paper with the bullet and a kind of plaster and the powder, and they put it in. You have to put it. Yes, and they showed the new ammunition to that Indian soldiers, and they said, you have to bite in that paper, spit out the paper, and then so you open that paper cartridge in the back so you mm-hmm. can fire it so the spark can get into, mm-hmm. and then you do it in and you close the gun and the rifle, and then you shoot. Mm-hmm. The Indian soldiers denied to do that. And yes. The British officer went mad. They couldn't mm-hmm. understand what it's kind of a mutiny, what's wrong here, and so on. And it started a big fight, a big revolt,
mm-hmm.
till they found out, because these paper cartridges were greased in cow grease.
Mm-hmm.
Cow and pig.
Yeah, and so the Indian soldiers denied to bite into that cow grease, and that caused a big, big revolution. It's true, no?
Yes, it is very much true. Actually, what happened in 1857?
Yeah.
This happened in 1857, mm-hmm. and there was a, and it happened. It started from a place named Meerut. There was a barrack, and it was in. Because a lot of Indians were in British Army, in the Army of East India Company. So there was a spark that these cartridges were having, grease of animal fat, right?
Yeah.
It is red with animal fat.
To protect against moisture and something. Yes.
And it was also propagated that one cow and pig, both their fat are used in it.
Mm-hmm.
Muslims don't like pig religiously, and Hindus worship cow. So this happened on religion basis.
Mm-hmm.
This revolt happened due to the mm-hmm. culture and religion of mm-hmm. India.
Yeah.
So they denied to open that cartridge, and they will not even Britishers tried to pursue them that no, this is not like that, and but mm-hmm. they didn't listen, and it was a revolt, and it further it was planned by the Indian local kings.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
And yes, and then it become a big, not only mutiny, it has become the first freedom fight of India.
Wow.
Yeah.
And in India it is not called as a revolt, it is called first Indian freedom fight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I don't know if it's true, but they said at first the British couldn't understand what is going on, because they thought they're just doing a kind of mutiny, till they found out it's a religious thing to don't bite into that
animal. No, it was told to them, but they were not admitting that. Mm-hmm. They were not saying that it is not there. It is not there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So Britisher didn't admit it, that fact that it is wrapped with cow fat or pig fat. Mm-hmm. So, but nobody was ready to listen then. But it was already shoot off. The revolt was shoot off.
And you know, because not the only reason why I mentioned this, but it's a very nice example. A very nice example. You can plan, I say this because of Armin, you can plan a lot of conspiracies or things, but you can't, you can't foresay this. You can't, you can't imagine this because the British never thought about this. They thought, oh, it's nice grease, the cartridges are protected, everything is nice, and so we will go on. And there's one little, sorry to say it, one little shit, and it disturbs, it destroys your whole strategy.
Because didn't know about the religion. They didn't know the religious setup of Indians that time. They were just doing their business.
Yeah.
They were expanding their business. They were not aware about the sentiments of Indian religious.
They were too arrogant. They knew it, but they thought, you know.
I don't think so. To me, this is a sign, a proof that such big conspiracies can get stopped by very little. Effects or causes or
small sand grain in a gearbox.
Like that. I'm sure they were not. I'm quite sure it was not just arrogance. They had the best for their army in mind, but then this happened.
Mm-hmm. Actually, on the backdrop, the Indian kings were uniting themselves against British rule, but this mutiny or this freedom struggle. It was without plan. So it happened prior to their planning. And that the both things were under, they were not planned, but it happened.
And because it was not planned, it don't turned out to get the Indians really connected, maybe. Because if it would have been a plan, it would have worked out better, maybe, no?
Planning was going there, but it happened prior to that, the action of other kings.
Very interesting story. I love that story because nobody can think about that. It happens.
Mangal Pandey was the first soldier who shot the British Britishers, the sepoy. He was the sepoy who shot down the, after knowing the fact that this is containing cow fat.
It was a kind. It was. I think it was called like how Sepoy Revolution or something like that. No.
Yes. What Britishers call it.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. So, but again, back to the question: when you started archery, you didn't have an instructor or something that who showed at you how to shoot, or how was it?
At that time, I was not having any instructor. I was just doing as my own, on my own, just like a backyard person.
That's okay.
But when I told you that when my bow was broken, I got some bows from online, from three places, one from Alibo, one from Sarmata Archery, and one was from Nika Archery, that is Mughal bow. Manguan bow, that plastic bow. So I started with it. I will show you the bow which I started with. Number one, this is the bow. Its limb were broken, but it is still with me.
With I got it from local site and with everything on it.
So it was very pretty easy for me to check with this bow. And after that, because this was the single piece that I found on the shop, and after that nobody came there to purchase any bow. When I went back there, that I need some more arrows. They said you were the only person who took that bow. After that, nobody came.
I'm sorry to interrupt. What kind of wood was used back then in the Indian traditional bows?
Sir, there was mostly used bamboo. Okay. Number one, there was we say mahogany, kikar. It is a local wood. And
these were kind of mulberry. And these were kind of recurved bows.
Yes, I will show you some.
Yeah.
Nice cushions.
This is like the bow. This is a cane, bamboo cane bow, Indian bamboo cane bow. Okay. I have made this bow.
Nice.
We make it like this.
Looks very powerful, you know, very fat limbs.
How strong? How much pounds?
This one is on around 35 pound.
Okay.
This one is around 35. This is not laminated. This is a single piece. This is a bamboo.
Okay.
It is a bamboo cane.
So you heat bend it, or how do you do that?
Steam bending.
Steam bending. Okay.
And one more.
He gets excited now.
That birch tree is nice in the back, no? Birch tree tapestry.
Yeah. These are the tribal kind of bows which we used to make.
Okay.
Bamboo bow. This is purely bamboo bow. Small. It is 45 pound, small one.
45 pounds, good.
Yeah. And it is interesting because the former bow has very thick limbs and has 35 pounds, and this one has more than 40 and has very thin limbs.
Yes, this is also cane bow that we make.
But has two colors. So what or is it only painted on the on the?
No, I have just used leather ink.
Leather ink. Okay.
Leather ink.
Nice. Did you do a review of this bow? I never saw one.
No.
Yeah, why
one
not?
Of my no. One of my friend, he I have sent my bow to him. He reviewed that.
Okay.
I have named it Mitra.
I thought I'm your friend and you would send it to me, but it's okay.
I will send it to send you. I will surely send it one of my bow to you when I will think that it is really to be reviewed by Armin.
Oh my God!
Actually, this bow I was making for Agama Green. But I was not happy with it. So now the next version, I am making another version for her.
she has more bows than me. She's so
just me. Yeah. Let me ask you. I don't know if it's just like painted like that or made like that, because in my opinion, with that short bows you show us, you have a very long riser section. So in my opinion, I don't know if I'm right. I know I'm right, but I just said the shorter the riser section is, the more working limb you have, no?
Of course.
Yeah. Actually, it is. This was not completed properly. But its riser will help it to be more stable.
So, what is the max draw of this bow? 28 inches?
It is 29.
29. Okay. Nice. You get more pressure on the outer part of the limbs the longer the riser is. Or when you have a nice fade out, of course you don't have this sudden motion, so you have it more graduated. So it's fine, I guess.
Actually, this material has some constraints. If we will make its ends, its siyas. very sharp, then it will be, it will twist, it can be twisted or bended also.
Yeah.
So we have to take some care about it.
Mm-hmm. So it's more like a flat bow than a flat profile. Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Single cool. piece.
That's very good. Yeah, start and then you need to create this demand even in India that people realize that they need to shoot bow and arrow and that they need to have one. Cannot be that a sport shop doesn't have bow and arrow in a country where which is so related to archery.
And this
we have lost our bow makers.
Yeah.
Actually.
And in India, is a bow and arrow like a weapon or like a sports tool
it's a weapon.
It's a weapon.
Mm-hmm. So legally, it's a weapon. So you do need a license or a weapon license?
No. It is a traditional weapon. So traditional weapons doesn't need license. It is not forbidden. Because still there are these bows are used by a lot of tribal peoples.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We have a lot of tribes here in India. They still their livelihood is on hunting. So they have a different kind of bows. They have long bows of bamboo.
Mm-hmm.
So they make their own bows and they have some very good technique of hunting and using the bow in a very different manner, different way. Not these kind of war bows style.
Mm-hmm.
These are different category. That tribal people have some different category of bows.
So bow hunting is allowed in India so far?
Two tribals.
Not for common people?
No, not for. If we want to do hunting, we have to take permission or permit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Or a license.
Yeah.
But it's possible.
Yeah.
It is possible. You have to take permissions. And with that permission, you can only kill one or two animals only.
Like
wild or those animals which are permitted, like nilgai or wild boar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense.
So deer hunting is prohibited, and any other kind of hunting is prohibited like that.
Mm-hmm.
People who are living in forests, tribals, they have their livelihood on hunting, so those are allowed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was, I think it was in the 1960s, Fred Bear was in India hunting tigers with his recurve bow and arrows. You know this?
I don't know.
Really. He was invited by kind of Maharaja and he hunted tigers with a bow and arrow in India.
Yeah, there were some happenings or something, stories that there were man-eaters, tigers. So, Jim Corbett was the...
Yeah, this is my favorite guy, Jim Corbett. He wrote a lot of books about... You know him, Armin?
No.
Yeah.
Jim Corbett, he was an English officer.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, his duty was to hunt man-eating leopards and tigers. So it was from the government, they sent him to villages where man-eaters were around. And he was kind of like of a detective and he found out how and so on. And he was I think even the English would say he was a nice guy. And later in his life, he became a big animal protector in Africa and everywhere. He was a really nice person, in my opinion. I don't know.
Here we have a big national park also on his name, Jim Corbett National Park.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Very interesting guy. And his books.
He has written many books on wildlife.
And there were leopards. They killed 300 people in a village or so.
Yeah.
Or even tigers. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't believe.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And now there is a project Tiger to save tiger in India.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. As long as they don't eat men, it's fine, you know.
Look. Man Eaters of India by Jim Corbett.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very nice book.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Did you ever go hunting, Jasminda, with bow and arrow?
No. Never.
Yeah.
I was telling you about my learning of archery, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, what happened in during this lockdown, before lockdown, Sir Vithase Varlak visited my place. He's from Germany. You may be knowing him. He wrote a book about bow and arrows of Indian subcontinent.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He was with me here. He stayed at my place and he also taught me about traditional archery, about Indian archery.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great learner and he guided me that where I was doing wrong and how I have to correct it. Because, because I think that even though anybody can start archery, but without a mentor, guide, teacher or guru, you cannot do a perfect archery, because something you make a habit.
Yeah.
If you are doing something wrong,
you don't know it by yourself and you bring it into your body.
Until your mentor corrects it.
Yep.
You, exactly. And otherwise you will keep on doing all that exactly. bad habit and you think that you are doing good, but it is not good.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
If I see my old videos, I see what I was doing like that, why I was doing like that.
You know, Armin is a big guru. Armin is a big.
I make so many mistakes. I have so many bad habits. It's incredible. I shoot so bad. The thing now, it's really I shoot bad because every day I shoot a different bow, different arrows. And it's horrible. If you only shoot one bow with one set of arrows, you get so good with it. But every day I have a different bow and test a new bow and only shoot a few arrows. Then I get the next bow and shoot a few arrows. And I shoot so horrible.
This also happens with me. I'm also doing this.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Jasminda, I have another historical or kind of political question. And I want to ask you, what about Mahatma Gandhi? Because here in our Western world, he's kind of the big savior of the Indians and he threw out the British and so on. But on the other hand, I wrote very nasty stuff also about him. I don't know. I just want to ask you, what is the view of the Indians on Gandhi?
There are two parts. One are pro and other some are anti. Mm-hmm. Right?
Okay.
And it happens to every leader.
Mm-hmm.
There are pro also, there are anti also.
Yeah.
So pro, they worship him like God. They say him as a father of nation, but there are other sect also that those who said that they, due to Mahatma Gandhi, our freedom was delayed. So there are two facts, things, but I will say that many people has written books on him. Only such personality has something that people used to write books on him. So he must be having some.
There are also many books out about Hitler. So that's not.
Or Stalin or something.
even if we talk about Hitler, he must be having some quality. That's why he became Hitler. He was known.
True. In some ways, he had.
Was smart. So, he was charismatic. Yes, of course.
I read that the British like to forbid or to fight the caste system in India. You know that castes. The lower people and so on. I don't know too much about it, and they said Gandhi denied that. He stayed with this old system because, I don't know if, you know, we in the West have a different view of this caste system. And so
actually, caste system was a system of Indian culture, Indian society. Okay, that caste system was from Vedic period. That was not made like that. Slowly and gradually during the passage of time, it became something else. It was mm-hmm. earlier, it was based on your profession.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Casteism was based on profession, truly mm-hmm. profession. Mm-hmm. That there were Brahmin who were called learners, or their duty was to teach the people of the mm-hmm. society.
Mm-hmm.
Now there was Kshatriya. Second, Kshatriya means they were warriors who need to protect all the three castes. Okay. Mm-hmm. There was Vaishya. Vaishya were business class. And mm-hmm. there were Shudra who were doing other acts like leather work or other small
mm-hmm.
items.
Mm-hmm.
So each and every part of the society, this four caste together becomes a society.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like that. It was segregated like that. But slowly and gradually, they started calling some learners started calling them upper class, and then this class system was removed is still persisting in India,
mm-hmm.
but now we are fighting against it as a member of societies. Everybody is doing, even in Sikhism there is no they denied casteism,
mm-hmm.
and but it still persists.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the people, even some, if I talk about Gandhi, there was some at that period, people, what he denied was untouchability.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
the lower caste, very low caste.
There was system that don't touch me. You became to you. You are a low caste people. Mm-hmm. Don't touch me. That was untouchability.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a between higher caste and lower caste.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This was not actually required at the time. Was not made for in the beginning, but mm-hmm. slowly, gradually, it happened in the society.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. Mahatma Gandhi denied this thing, and he called all people to become together and leave this untouchability fact
with the original caste system.
And Jasminda, because you say it was based on the professions, you know, warriors and teachers and so on. And is it not true that it is also based on karma, on how you had in your former life, you were a bad person, so you become a very low caste, or you were
No, okay. That is a myth. Nothing.
Okay,
karma,
so
karma, karma is something different.
It's nothing religious. Nobody says because you were a bad person in your former life, now you became an untouchable. That's not true.
No, that is a myth that is called by the upper caste people to curb the smaller caste.
Okay, like that. I understand.
That is not in religious books or.
I understand. Anyway. Okay, so that's something. That's something I learned today,
mm-hmm.
because I thought the caste system is based on religion, not on handcrafts or you know, profession.
Caste system was a setup of society
mm-hmm.
from ancient times. From mm-hmm. ancient times, it was a setup of society, not about the anything related to religion.
Mm-hmm. It is not interesting. Religion. Interesting.
Good that we have a lawyer here today.
Yeah.
He can explain everything here.
You know, the lawyers, they know to turn everything.
Yeah,
so it's
yeah,
not...
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, Indian law said the person who is not Christian, who is not Muslim, he's a Hindu.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, man. Not bad. Yeah. Great.
And are there still... Because I think back then, Pakistan was also India, no?
Yes, Indian territory was.
It was parted also by the British because of religion, no, of Muslim and Hindu religion, no? Is it true? I think so.
Yes. There was a partition in 1947. So in basically they wanted, there were two candidates for to become a prime minister. One was Mr. Jinnah, one was Mr. Jawaharlal Nehru. So they both wanted to become prime minister of India. So Muhammad Ali Jinnah said, if you don't make me the prime minister, then I will make, we should have another country. He will become the prime minister of other country. So this happened and people were very much victimized in that freedom movement. There were riots. There were big riots between Hindus and Muslims. And the Pakistan was made other country. And there was, in fact, there was two territories were made for Pakistan. One was East Pakistan, one was West Pakistan. Now that is, that West Pakistan is Bangladesh.
Okay.
Because if you remember back then, it was, all this was called Hindustan.
It is, you still know? Called Hindustan.
Yeah, it, was a big... Yeah,
From Iran to the territory of Burma, and it was India. And if we go more in ancient time, at the time of Cholas, in fact, the whole area of till Philippines, it was in Indian territory.
Okay.
Yeah.
That Java, Sumatra, Malaysia, it was with, you will find the Indian culture in. Influence of Indian culture there also. Still, there are big temples. And their culture, old setup. Prior to being Muslims, they were Hindus.
Okay.
Of course, because the Muslim religion is a very young religion. Interesting. Interesting.
And still, their names are like Indians. They're still, their local names are like Indians only. In they are in Hindi and Sanskrit.
Nice.
I never was to India, but I always dreamed about it because it is a land of mystery, a land of the jungles and of very different people, and very interesting.
For me, it's your old knowledge about this Ayurveda or Vastu Purushna. You know, the knowledge of how to build. And knowledge of how to build a house and how to, you know, with these 18 sections, you know, and then the outer one you leave because there are the demons, and all this is so interesting for me. You know,
Vastu Shastra. That is
exactly.
Vastu
Shastra. Yeah, totally.
And, and you know what, Jasminda, here over in the West, most people don't know, they, it's very hip and very modern or woke to be in Ayurveda and that stuff. They don't realize that it is a religion and not a kind of how, what you are eating and how you live, but a religion. They don't realize it. No, the same Ayurveda, with yoga.
Ayurveda is book of medicines.
Yeah,
you can see.
Yeah, but
herbal, based only herbal things.
But based on religious ideas of, about chakras and something like that.
Why do they have to be religious?
That is no, sir. That is only learning. That what we say that India. I told you that India was called known as Vishwaguru, means a teacher of the world. So many things always we prefer in old Indian culture. Learning was very much preferred. Everything knowledge, lot of knowledge, lot and lot of knowledge. So many things were there. We have all. We don't have now. We don't have all those kind of texts with us. Some have been taken by Britishers. They are studying those scriptures, and they have taken in their museums. Some many of things we have lost. Lost over time. Some people they used to keep them keep those texts as their forefathers things, but they also. So I don't know where they all those things have went. Some are been still under studies. Some are kept in temples. So all thing is scattered. The knowledge is now scattered and very light bit knowledge is there.
But it's said that all these knowledge comes from these books, from this Upanishad, and how do you call it in English?
Upanishads.
And it's written half by humans and half by some gods Devas. Or something?
Yes, yes. It is a saying that it is written like that. And it, mm-hmm. Further, it was more propagated by the sages, holy sages.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's interesting. They have such a deep, long history.
Because a very rich culture. It is a very ancient. It was a civilization. There are many other civilizations mm-hmm. which were in India. Now they are during excavations. Many things are coming out.
Okay.
But if you would heard about the Simbhauli, recently there was an excavation. Simbhauli.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was a mass graveyard, and many weapons and bows have been excavated in that excavation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They found this. A big chariot was also there.
Mm-hmm.
It means we were having horses from the very beginning. It was contemporary to Harappan civilization. Mm-hmm. That is also found. So
how old was this stuff?
It was I don't remember exactly, but it was contemporary to Harappan. What they are saying, excavation
mm-hmm.
is saying
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Harappan civilization. It is. I can't
you know since they excavated this in Turkey this Göbekli Tepe everything has changed because there's a kind of big excavation and temples and stuff out of nowhere without any culture and cultural background so to say. So I'm sure in India they are older and older things and stuff than in Turkey, I'm sure. Interesting.
Yeah.
So this Göbekli Tepe turned all the historians' calculations around because it was, I don't know, 12,000 years old or 11,000, I don't know.
Many things the historians have written, they are being now countered by the new excavations.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
all the calculations are getting
mixed up. Yeah. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's very great. Cool. So,
we like to see the knife of the week from a Sikh.
Yes.
Really?
You have one? You have one close to you?
No, I don't have one close to me, but I can.
Oh. Bring one.
I can.
Yes.
Okay. Just hold on. I will bring.
Oh, no problem.
I have one prepared too.
No, then. Ooh, yeah, kukri. Yeah, of course. A small kukri.
Yeah, little one.
Yeah. But they were so insane. They had 1 centimeter spine thickness. They are made from truck spring leaves and they could decapitate a sheep with it or something. With this forward angle of the blade, you get such a force with it. That's insane.
They were very feared because also in World War II, the Gurkhas had them. The British had that Gurkha troopers.
Mm-hmm.
Very feared.
Yeah, interesting.
Nice talking. I love to learn about cultures and some stuff we hear, and you can ask him if it's true or so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, sometimes it's from brainwash media or they want you to think.
Yeah. Oh, no.
It's not a knife.
Oh, no.
Looks a little bigger than a knife.
You know, these Sikhs are all machos.
Yeah. Okay,
this is a small size.
Uh-huh. Pretty.
Wow.
Very nice. What is the handle made of? Horn? No.
It is antler.
Antler, yes. Okay.
Stag. Mm-hmm. Stag, yeah.
Yeah, nice. Better.
And this is a typically Sikh knife?
Yes, it is called face cubs.
Wow.
Wow.
So, and this is for the religious purpose, you have to carry it with you when you leave your house. Yes. So, now I imagine in Germany, you are not allowed to carry a blade which is longer than your hand is wide. But for the religious purpose,
they have small ones. Maybe
it's free religion.
Then it becomes a symbolic.
Yeah.
They can't do anything against it. This is
called our kirpan.
Wow. Nice.
Wow.
Love it. You know how to fight with it? You know how to, huh?
Yes.
Of course.
we have learned martial arts, martial arts. That is called jatka.
So, okay. Nice.
Great.
Very nice. Did you ever try this chakram too?
Yes. I don't have chakra right now, but I have I know how to throw chakra.
You know, you throw them with a finger or like a frisbee?
With two hands.
With two hands? Oh, cool.
Two hands also and with one hand also.
Okay. Nice. I love these chakrams. They are so insane.
Once I have seen a kind of weapon like a metal ring they throw.
Yes. It's a chakra.
That's okay. Like a frisbee.
And they.
That's what I'm talking about.
And I saw once a video of a Sikh warrior, and he used. They are not very thick. They are made out of a thin, but they fly like a frisbee. They have a slight wing profile, and then he was throwing it into a bamboo field.
Bamboo cuts off.
And he cut everything off, and it was simply made to cut your legs. So it really cuts through bones, and you throw it in. It's devastating.
During war, it was being used very much by Sikh warriors.
Mm-hmm.
They had also protect their heads also, because we used to carry those rings on our turban.
Okay.
Once I heard, or even in Western literature, it's present back then, a kind of sect. They were called the thugs or something. They strangled the people with a kind of rope or so. Is it, you know, something about it?
No, that wasn't that wired thing. That was to catch animals basically,
in this literature, I don't know if it's true. They were more described like it was a kind of religious or a kind of group. And they use this kind of garrote or kind of leather strap to strangle people, to murder them. But I don't know.
No, we don't have. Not in my knowledge.
Okay.
Show us your knife, Peter. Come on.
Oh, because we're talking with with Jasminda.
I do have cookeries.
a nice little cookery. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting.
And they are so versatile. You can really chop wood with it. You can do everything with this. They have this force with this angled blade. It's incredible what force you can get out of this.
And I just said to Armin, even in World War II, the British had Gurkhas, you know, these soldiers, and they had them. And they were very feared because of that cookeries. Yeah. I love it. Mm-hmm. And there are also these little knives.
Wanted to ask for what was the purpose of these small ones?
I just want to ask you that too.
To sharpen it.
To sharpen the big one.
Yes.
To sharpen actually, the big one.
Yes, there are two kind of small things.
Okay.
One was to rub and sharpen the cookery.
It makes sense. It makes totally sense. Yeah.
To shave off the blood from the blade.
No, blood never comes to the handle because you can find two notches there.
Exactly, they have this.
Yeah.
So the blood flows from.
I saw a kind of documentary about that. That's one explanation for these edges, but they, I'm not sure what was the cause of this.
There are two things. One, it is for flowing the blood, or secondly, it is like Om. It is a Hindu symbol.
That one.
Mm-hmm. The Om. It is one in the shape of Om.
Yeah.
It is called, and the other thing is that the blood should flow from. Mm-hmm. It should not come on the handle of grip of the kukri. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow,
very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Very
and
nice.
I said, in the original ones, they had a 1 centimeter thick spine. They were really made out of the
spring leaves and so on. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Really nice. Great. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So yep. what is your favorite bow now that we go back to archery? And what's your favorite bow right now?
Yeah, I like Tatar bows.
Tatar bow, okay. And what arrows do you shoot with it? Carbon, wood, bamboo?
I prefer wood and bamboo arrows.
Okay. You have...
I have carbon. Hmm. I have carbon, but I don't prefer. I love to shoot with wooden and bamboo arrows. I have made some like this. These are okay. Indian Manipuri bamboo arrows with wooden knocks.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Nice. So you made them? Good.
Yes, I made it.
Mm-hmm. Out of bamboo. And you have arrows?
Spruce wood arrow also.
Spruce, okay. Mm-hmm.
And maple wood.
Wood also. You don't seal them? You don't lacquer them?
No, I like carbon. Initially, I started with that bow with carbon arrows only. Mm-hmm. But when I was in traditional archery, then I preferred to shoot with these fully traditional arrows.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. Makes sense. Nice. So, but you don't put away the sealing on your wood arrows.
No, I put I do varnish them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I do varnish them sometimes with oil or mm-hmm. tungsten oil or
okay,
mm-hmm.
nice, very nice.
Or wax, yep. We can use wax also.
Mm-hmm.
And is there a kind of special traditional target in India or in your region? You know, because actually, the Turkish have that special target and the Koreans have a special yeah. target face, and so do you have something like that?
So if I say about Dhanurveda, we had different kind of targets mm-hmm. and there were moving targets also. There were static targets also.
Mm-hmm.
So there are targets. There are different kind of targets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to hit those targets, different kind of arrows are also mentioned there in Dhanurveda.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For every purpose was there different arrows and even all the different draw techniques. There's five, yes, six, seven different draw techniques in the book.
Yes, there are seven, eight techniques.
I have to get that book. I see. I have to get that book about Indian archery.
Yeah, I have this German one from Henrik Wiethase.
Yes, I know him. Yeah,
he is a lot in India and he studied and he made this book about Dhanurveda.
I told about him only. He was with me. And yeah. he taught me.
He showed you what you do wrong. Yeah, yeah, of course. Yes.
So all this Indian archery stems from Wiethase.
But I got an old copy of these writings too, so you can read it too. But it's of course very different written and the translation. So he simply wrote it then in a manner that an archer could understand what's going on.
Yeah, very simple and interesting.
Yeah. It's very interesting. Great. Mm-hmm. So, but
because many of the books written on Indian archery were not written by
Indians.
Yeah, archers. Not the archers. Written by poets or something. Yeah, and they made some.
They were either they were translators or they were librarians or something like that.
Yeah.
But because when I studied those books mm-hmm. and I tried to see what actually practically what the draws and everything is possible or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I came to know that yes, something is need to be corrected also.
Yeah.
So we are again. I have a team of my associates, my friends, who are working on Dhanurveda from mm-hmm. right from the scrap.
Nice.
So they are Sanskrit scholars. They mm-hmm. compiling. Again, we are trying to make more precisely the slokas want to say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that people should get the proper knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Knowledge of this Dhanurveda. Yes.
And you know, speaking from a critical point of view, let's say it like that. In German, we say it's a kind of devil's circle, because I don't like to talk anything bad about Witthase. But if you're a big fan, a big follower of a culture or of a sport or you name it, then you don't have a very critical point of view in that stuff. So it would be interesting. You know, I like Witthase, and I think I also have his book, but he's a big fan of this culture. Mm. So he's not as critical as one
you get,
could
you get
be.
A little. Mm.
Yeah. But on the other hand, nothing to say, because he wrote this book and it's a great book. No, nothing wrong about.
Mm. He has adopted Hinduism also.
Pardon?
He has a different name in India. Mm. Witthase. Sir Witthase has adopted Hinduism also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the same is true if you talk about Sexton Pope. He was a big fan of the English longbow. So the only good bow was the English longbow, which is also not true. But he was a big fanboy of the English longbow. Yeah. And so Witthase is a big fanboy of Indian archery. And so that's what I mean. That's what I wanted to say
about it. You see what you want to see, and the rest you see.
Yeah. And you talk it into gold and so on. Yeah.
Jasminda, did you have in your culture these pellet bows too? You know, this lightweight shoot, you had to. So like in China hunted birds?
Still in our tribal areas, we have such bows. People used to hit small hens and wild cocks by those bows. Mm-hmm. We have two kind of strings, one to shoot with arrow, and the other
with a pouch.
There is a leather thing for holding the pebble or marble.
Did you ever try it?
No, I haven't tried it.
I think it's dangerous, you know. I mean, when you shoot a slingshot, you always put your hand away, and here you really need to put your hand away too, because otherwise you shoot your hand.
That is the thing to be learned from the tribal people, how they do that.
Exactly.
You know what we should do, in kind of expedition to the tribals in India to see how they shoot the bow and arrow, making some nice movie clips and so on. That would be nice.
We need to go there, Peter, for 4 weeks.
Yeah,
will be our guide. I will do that.
let's go to the tribes and make some nice pictures and how they shoot and so on. That would be my thing.
Why not? Yeah. Everything is possible in the future.
We just need Bill Gates to pay it. because I'm sorry, I mentioned it, but all our guests, we ask about their favorite conspiracy. If there is in India a special local Indian conspiracy theory about the world or about something. Do you have one for us?
I don't understand about what kind of conspiracy you're talking about.
Locally,
which relates to India only, or which is this?
Not about the moon landing or 9/11 or something or Kennedy assassination, like everybody talks about, but a special Indian conspiracy. Do you have one?
No.
Mother Teresa was not a woman or something.
There were a lot of conspiracies in India, and sometimes something happens. Mm. And after that, we came to know that was a conspiracy. Mm-hmm.
That was not a conspiracy. It was true.
Which has happened right now all day, every day.
You know about Mother Teresa?
Yeah.
I've
seen her.
What is the opinion about her in India?
She was given being a lady in Nobel Prize. She was a Nobel Prize winner, and she was doing a lot of service to the humanity in the area completely. She was very motherly figure, what we say.
But
people really, really like her very much in India. Yeah. She is a motherly figure.
Mm-hmm. But isn't it true that she just brought the dying persons to her hospital and didn't help them, but just let them die in her place, and they even denied them, how is it called, Schmerzmittel?
Painkillers.
They even denied medication. Them painkilling medication and so on. She just brought them there to her place and let them die. Isn't that true also? I don't know.
No, I don't have knowledge about that.
Okay.
I cannot comment on it. But yes, people like her due to her services.
Mm-hmm.
That how she has served the society. So people acknowledge that.
And she got a lot of money for this.
Yes,
from all around the world, you know.
Yes. A lot of funding was also on her name.
Mm-hmm.
Still the trusts are running on her name.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's good. At least she did something.
Yeah.
But where did she, was she, was she in, where did she, was she born?
She was from, I think, from Romania or something. Czechoslovakia.
Okay.
Yeah.
She was from Czechoslovakia.
I have no idea about the history of her. Okay. But you have know to, everything, Jasmine. It's nice.
You have to do some research about her, Armin.
Why?
Because it's interesting.
You did your research already and you already have your opinion. It's fine.
Well, Mother Teresa was not an archer.
Exactly. Then we need to talk about this. Well, what was his name? Arjuna? No, what was his
Arjuna,
name?
Arjuna.
Yeah.
Arjun.
What he all did. So with the mirror, shooting the fish in the mirror and whatever. All this stuff.
He used to... there was a competition for getting married.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the person who hits the eye of the fish that was revolving over the top and by looking into the water kept in a pot. So this was the competition, and the person who will hit the eye of the fish, he will marry that.
Marry, okay.
That lady who was the daughter of a king,
mm-hmm.
who was a princess.
Mm-hmm.
That is called Draupadi. So this this thing happened, and Arjuna won the competition.
Okay, nice.
Today it would be the other side around. They would say, I don't like to hit the fish because I don't want to marry.
Where's the fish? There. Okay. I missed. I'm sorry.
But I'm in my opinion, the trick shooters, you know, that show archers like Howard Hill and so on, or Byron Ferguson, I always connect them back to Ulysses, to Odysseus. To this was a trick shot when he shot through the axis.
Mm-hmm.
And even this shot with the mirror, you still can see it with Howard Hill and Byron Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
They still do the mirror shot. They look into the mirror and shot at the target. Yeah. So these are very old tricks, so to say. And they also did it with firearms, you know, that Anne Oakley had the mirror shot with the rifle and so on. Very interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is Arjuna a study material in schools, or is it only if you're interested?
He's Ace Archer. Still, he's known as Ace Archer from India, ancient India, at the time of Mahabharata.
Okay.
And we have the prestigious sports award on his name, Arjuna Award in India. It is the most prestigious award for the people who are doing something in sports.
I understand.
In India, okay. So that is being awarded.
Is it also an Arjuna story? I don't remember where I got it. There was an incident when they liked to go to another country or to an island, and a horde of monkeys built a kind of bridge from stones.
That was from Ramayana.
Oh, nice story.
Actually, that bridge was made from Kanyakumari to Sri Lanka.
Yeah, and it okay. Yes,
and it has been found. It is found by the satellite also now.
Yeah, it's a kind of Tamil story also, no?
It is an Indian connected story, mm-hmm. part of Ramayana, where a bridge was made because the king of Lanka, he took the wife of Lord Rama,
who is placed.
So mm-hmm. Rama followed him to mm-hmm. to rescue his wife from nice. By way of that bridge also.
And the bridge was built by apes, by monkeys. Yes, big monkeys, no?
It is, yes, it is there in Ramayana. It is described in that mm-hmm. because there was a big kingdom of monkeys there, or you can say monkey, human looked like monkeys.
Mm. Yeah, but, so they say maybe these were kind of some wild people, some very native people, so and they called them just monkeys or so. We don't know.
But yes, there was a place named Kishkinda, and Kishkinda was monkey kings.
Mm-hmm. Like you see in the Jungle Books from Rudyard Kipling with mm-hmm. the monkey kingdom mm-hmm. and so on. Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, they have the ideas from somewhere, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Nice. Very good. Very interesting.
Are you Indians reading Rudyard Kipling?
Pardon?
Rudyard Kipling, I think he was a British, but he lived in India and he was partly Indian, I don't know. And he wrote that famous Mowgli, you know, the Jungle Book story.
Yes, Mowgli, Jungle Book story.
I recollect.
But he's a kind of very good writer. I think he understood the Indian culture and everything. Very nice.
It is a popular, Jungle Book is popular very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice.
So the movies are also made on it.
I think he lived in India, no? This writer, this Kipling.
Yes. Because that's why he was so much connected with his stories.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He had also a nice spy story. I think it was called Kim or something, a spy story with spies and you know, agents and so on. Very nice. Yeah.
I remember an old black and white movie, The Tiger from Eshnapur. You remember?
It was not black and white.
No, I remember it. It was
I don't know the English title, but the one was The Tiger from Eshnapur, and there was a second movie, the Indian Tomb or Grave or
something. Yeah.
These were very wonderful made German movies.
Yeah.
German nice movies. Dances and so on, and very colorful, and
Temple of Doom.
Yeah, and I always look back and say, look what wonderful movies the Germans were able to make.
Yes, 50 years ago. Yeah.
And
now this is, but not even Hollywood is struggling. That's why Bollywood is booming, because the Indians know how to make movies. And always dancing.
I had a former girlfriend, and she was a big fan of these Bollywood movies. Mm-hmm. I had to watch them with her, you know, all this dancing and singing. I disliked it, but she was wow.
People here like all kind of spice in one. And they need to relax in 3 hours by watching movies. So they need everything. They need dancing. They need songs. They need storyline.
A bit romance, a bit drama, everything.
Everything in one package.
Yeah, exactly.
That and very, sense. Very beautiful and wonderful actors and actresses. Yeah. Wow. Big stars because, over there.
Yeah.
Because everything is not typed here. It is not one typical. Now the subjective movies are being made. Otherwise, earlier times, emotions, comedy, action, everything was in one movie, mm-hmm. one package.
Yeah, so, yeah.
And actor has to be very versatile in all those kind of acts.
Very good.
Yeah. I think in the early days of Hollywood, it was the same.
Yeah.
Now
you look at Alec Baldwin, kill some people on the set. Yeah, but you know.
But you know, have you heard it now? George Clooney came out.
Okay.
George Clooney said, if they handle him a gun, he opens the gun and shows it to everyone around that it's empty. And then he closes the gun and then he shoots 6 times into the ground. And then he uses it in the movie scene.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he says, okay, there are such kind of actors and another kind of actors, and he's one of that kind.
You never know.
Nice.
Great. Now, I mean, I like all the books from India now, Kama Sutra, Six Hours. It's a very, not about the positions, but when you read about the energy, you know, what is going on.
Yeah, yeah, the energy.
This is what
the energy.
Nadir, how you call it? Not, you know, the nadirs and the energy points and stuff. That's very interesting.
You know, Jasmine is just interested in the energy, not in the women and girls, and just energy.
I'm in an age, energy is for me.
Just more. Energy, yeah.
Of course, yeah. I mean, they had similar things in China, but this came later. Everything in China, like Feng Shui, came later. I mean, Feng Shui is the younger brother of this Vastu Purushna. So that's
even the martial arts also traveled from India to China.
Yeah, like everything, all these knowledges came from India, and then the Chinese copied it and did a little less or different.
So the Indians.
Every culture has its own value also. So things get
The Chinese, the Chinese, of course, say everything came from China to India.
No, they can't say that.
Why? Yes,
Only now they can say that items are we are selling items to all over the world.
Yeah, now it's like this. Yes,
now but it's true. Now it's true. Everything comes from China. Yeah,
but in this time, you know that Buddha was there, and then many converted to Buddhism and left the Taoism. Yes. So that's why.
Yeah.
How many thousand years back Buddha lived? I don't know. I'm sorry.
The period of Ashoka, that was our king, and I don't know, I don't remember the exact date.
About approximately
1,000, 2,000.
It was contemporary period of great king Ashoka, Indian king.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Gautam Buddha was also a king, a prince who left his house, residing in Kapilvastu. He was there and from the border area of Nepal and India.
Mm-hmm.
So he came to India, and then in the search of God and truth. So that's how he
made Buddhism. I looked it up. So in Wikipedia, there is 232 years before Christ was Ashoka.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know. So that sounds not too old, so to say, because there are many, many temples and stuff, and much older than this Ashoka stuff, no?
Yes. There were. I told you that there was two sects of Hinduism. One was Vaishnav and one was Shaiva prior to Buddhism. Religion was always part of India, this kind of faith and religion in Indian culture. Mm-hmm. It was their own.
People get divided,
the people and society themselves divided between the by the name of God or worshipping styles.
And that kind of started about 200 before Christ.
Yes.
And before that, it was one Buddhism, like no Buddhism.
No. But prior to Buddhism, also there was religion. There was I told you, Vaishnav and Shaivs were there. So it is not that the Buddhism is the first religion. It was earlier. There were earlier also the faith and sects were there.
Yeah, Hinduism was first, of course. Yeah, kind of Hinduism. Okay. Yeah. But it is true that this real Buddha was also just one in a row of Buddhas, no?
And there were first Buddha was the first, you can say, the first saint of Buddhism. He started Buddhism, and the Buddhism were divided into two more sects, Hinayana and Mahayana. It was divided in two parts also. So there were a lot of divisions, and some people like Hinayana, some Mahayana. So there were diversities also in Buddhism.
Interesting.
Yeah, even in Thailand, I did a bus tour from Bangkok to Chiang Mai, and every day we visited at least one temple with one standing Buddha, sitting Buddha, laying Buddha. And after 1 week, I didn't. Yeah, you know this temple. I said, which one? With a standing Buddha. Oh, wait a second. You know, it was simply too much in 1 week on information. But it was also interesting. And you know, it was so wow.
And you see, Jasmine, they didn't help him. He's still a naughty boy from me? One day.
can I put my mirror away now, Peter? What you see in me is what you have in yourself. You know?
Yeah. You can go from one temple to the next, but it doesn't help.
It was a bus tour. What can I do? And one day we visited an orchid farm and then an elephant farm or whatever, but mostly always stopped. But the one nice one was this Ayutthayar. It was an old temple, broken down, abandoned. It was really nice, huge. It was interesting.
You know, we had a Roman Catholic priest here. Mm. He was a friend of mine. And I don't know the word in English, but to some women or so, he used to say, you should be boiled in holy water, in Vaivasa. You should be boiled in holy water. You're such a sinner.
Yeah, I had this once, one of my former girlfriends, she was friends with some people of some free Christian group. And then they invited us for Easter days. And then I was in their kind of church, and then they made music and everything was fine. And then they were talking about, because they have always a delegation, they collect money here and then they go to India to build schools. And I thought, what a nice idea. And then the other one stands on the podium, you know, we build schools and then finally we can teach them a proper religion. And I was like, what is he telling? And then he was standing there and, you know, and they worship elephant statues. And then I couldn't hold it anymore. I said, yeah, but you know, you idiot, how old is your religion compared to them? And you really like to judge them. And then they asked me friendly to leave the house. So, but you know, this is really, oh, I was...
They are worshipping elephants and stuff, and they are worshipping a dead body on a cross. Tortured body on a cross. Yeah. They are worshipping.
Yeah. But it's hilarious. So it's I had to leave. This is what you get with your Christian friends.
Jasminda, is it true that the Sikh men have long hair under their turban?
Actually, in Sikhism, cutting hair is prohibited.
Okay, I see.
So when we don't cut our hair, then it is naturally they are long or naturally they are short.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So and is there a story behind? Because, you know, in the Bible, there's also a story of that old...
Moses.
Not Moses, but Samson and this
Delilah,
this
yeah.
kind of yeah. first prophets and so, and they weren't allowed to cut their hair because it was their power or so. Mm. Very interesting.
Actually, it is believed that being a pure human, complete human, you have to keep all those things which comes with in your body. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if at the time of death or somebody will look that, yes, he is the complete human. He has, as the God has sent him, he's like that only.
Okay.
But you cut your fingernails and so on.
I just wanted to ask.
That is hygiene.
Yeah, I understand. And very interesting enough that first Frank kings, the Merovingians. Merovech and so on. These were in France and Germany, old kings. I think they were about 600 after Christ or so. They also weren't allowed to cut their hair.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
Because kings were basically, they were Kshatriya, and Kshatriya doesn't cut their hair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they were in Europe, you know. Mm-hmm. They were in Europe, European kings.
Oh, you are talking about European kings. Okay.
Yeah, very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
I mean, even in China, when you go to the martial arts schools, all these masters have long hair and they let everything grow. They don't cut their hair, so they tie them.
You know, the communists cut their how is it called in English, the top?
The
ponytail or
plate, something like this. Yeah.
How is it called? Just mean that if you have a long
ponytail. Long tail, we call it in then Brahmins mostly they have this long what we in Hindi we say it bodhi.
Exactly.
And, yeah, they are kind of Brahmins, and so they have kind of dreadlocks, mm-hmm. big
yes,
piles of hair with mm-hmm. them. I know.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And there are even some they don't cut their fingernails.
Yeah. Yeah, they get these.
Yeah.
Wow. But in nowadays, when you need to work on a computer, it's almost
you have to do.
they have women. They work for them, so oh, they don't.
Actually, in Sikhism, we have to carry five kind of our symbols. Mm-hmm. One is case. Case means hair.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One is kanga. Kanga means comb. To comb your hair.
Mm-hmm.
This is what hygienically it is connected, that you have to clean your hair always. You have to keep your comb with you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Secondly, third thing is kirpan. Kirpan I have already showed you. Kirpan means
mm-hmm.
this. So,
yeah.
Okay. One is kachha. Kachha means underwear. We have to take that with us always. We have to wear that all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Kashara, kanga, kirpan, kada, and this is the kada. This we have to wear always. This is iron ring.
Mm-hmm.
That the Sikh has to wear this.
Made from iron?
Yes, made of iron.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So oh, these nice. five things we have to carry with us.
Okay.
Interesting.
Always or only when you leave your private house, when you leave your house, or you need to wear it always, all the time?
Every day.
Okay, every day. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
No, those people carry all these things. Those are baptized as in Sikhism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They are called Khalsa.
Mm-hmm.
They live by that religion. They take it seriously. Yeah, I understand.
Yes.
Okay.
And are there some colors of the turban which are not allowed, or are there preferred colors, or is there any color symbolism in the turbans?
No. Actually, nothing like that. But yes, we'll mostly some colors are have some meaning mm-hmm. in like about the valor and courage. This orange color is there. Mm-hmm. Okay, there is a war color that is blue, the mm-hmm. navy blue. Okay, that people in Sikhs they used to wear that kind of color. White mm-hmm. is for harmony and peace and safe. Well, mm-hmm. It is all. General things are there, but it mm-hmm. is not religiously nowhere it is written that you have to wear this color only.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We are not restricted to colors. Colors are just
free.
Ah, they are colors.
Now, interesting that you ask, because that was my first question when we were talking and you were not there, Peter. And I was asking, does this yellow color has a special meaning or is a special? It was yeah.
Yes,
this is we Western
it is called. It is called Kesari color. So in most of the time, Sikhs like this color.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It is the same color of Sikh flag of Sikhism.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So this is the same color.
And is there also a kind of different size of turbans, or because
there are various kinds of turbans in it is just like some turbans are there which gives some symbol of a particular region.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like some people who are living in the city of Patiala, they use Patiala kind of turban and there are different kind of turbans.
Because it's interesting, because also the Osmans had turbans, and I have seen very old pictures of very big turbans, you know, like that. And yes, so on.
Those are our warrior people, Sikh warriors. Those are called Nihangs. They used to tie a very, very big turbans.
Mm-hmm.
They are warriors basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe also a kind of protection. Because
yes,
it protects
incoming arrows, you know, the turban catch them.
There are many other things to catch arrows.
There were
nets there, during the war time. We used to revolve the nets so the arrow cannot pass through those nets.
Makes sense.
It is revolved in such a speed that it arrow struck in it.
Okay. Wow. Yep.
Yeah, that would work, of course. If you rotate the net, the arrow won't go through. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So one protects the whole.
Yes, there is protection like that. They also rotate it on their head so that the arrow rain of arrow should not they protect it from arrow rains. And on revolving on front side, the coming arrow is obstructed.
Mm-hmm.
It was before they invented shields.
I just wanted to say it's way smarter than a shield.
No, as a shield you just have to hold and then.
Yeah, but it can break and it's heavy.
This thing
you simply come on.
Yeah.
It's more agile, more versatile.
It's more aerobic style.
Helps. Great.
Yeah.
Anything else, or shall we call it a day? It's now 2 hours, guys, already almost.
Well, nice I'm enjoying. Talking.
Now we will invite you for sure again, Jasmine.
Yeah, nice talking.
But you know, it's always some people complain that our podcasts are a little too long and we should make them shorter. So, and I always try at least that we don't extend the 2 hour margin, you know, that at least it's a nice, like a Hollywood movie, you know, it's 2 hours, good entertainment, better entertainment than every Hollywood movie, obviously, because we have guests like you. So it's always interesting.
Yeah.
And if you don't mind, we would like to invite you later on in a few weeks again. Then you can tell us from your progress in what you do there, and stuff like this. You know, even alone about the six, you could tell 2 hours interesting stuff. I am sure.
Yeah.
So that's why that was not only the first, you know, getting to know each other, and now we know what we can expect from you.
Nice.
And I am really very thankful to you, both of you, because you are connecting many of the archers of the world together. So this is a really commendable job what you people are doing. I am really very, very much happy and have a great respect for both of you.
Thank you, Jasmine. And it is in both directions because we are happy to get all these people from around the world. So that's really nice for.
If you are talking about religion, then I think archery is our religion.
This is the thing, and
as you see, it's in many cases deeply connected to religion.
But it stands above the religion, or it even connects beyond religions, because we are all archers. We all shoot bow and arrow, and it was used in religions and for religious purpose, but it's still, we all shoot bow and arrow. And that's why we always have this idea of uniting and getting together.
That is the connectivity.
If there are two opponent armies, in each army are archers. So they're archers and they're archers and they are all archers. Even if they fight each other, but they are archers.
But we with our reflex bows will always outperform these longbow archers, of course.
these toy bows.
But still, people nowadays, they don't know, they cannot differentiate between crossbow and compound bow.
I know, yes.
People ask me certain questions, then I tell them, that the people, the person who use crossbow, he's a crossbowman, yeah. And the person who use bow, he's an archer.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. And the difference, the difference, simple explained, is every crossbow has kind of a trigger system.
Trigger.
And a bow, you are the trigger. Whatever technique you shoot, you release the arrow. On a crossbow, you have a trigger.
Yeah, that is the connectivity.
Yeah.
Are there crossbows in Indian history? Of course, no?
Yeah.
No. Crossbows were invented by Chinese. So that is their baby.
Oh, that's the only thing the Chinese invented.
Yeah, at least they brought something back, you know. First, they took everything and then...
Actually, we had the technique of... hitting our target by bow and arrow, so we don't need.
The Chinese didn't know how to hit them, so they invented the crossbow. I understand. Crossbow,
most of them. That was easy, and virtually it was a failed weapon in ancient time also. It was not that good.
Mm-hmm.
Crossbow, because after that the butt was being introduced by Europeans. That, mm-hmm. Earlier it was only single flat thing to be used by putting the arrow on the flat plank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
joined with the bow.
Mm-hmm.
I think the crossbow was less difficult to train the soldiers with. Yeah. Than with the bow and arrow, and to mass produce mm-hmm. it, and so on.
Yeah.
But it was being used only once. And meanwhile, the person loads it until then the archer will hit them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why the Chinese built then these repeating crossbows, where they had a magazine on top with 10 bolts.
You're talking about Legolas.
It exists in Chinese history, but they were not very accurate or not very powerful because, of course, you cock and you load the crossbow with this motion. Of course, it's not a very powerful crossbow and it's not very accurate. But it's when you stand on your wall and you have 10 of these repeating crossbow mm-hmm. guys, and then of course they can send a small shower of these bolts down there.
Mechanical.
You know, because we talk about Chinese and conspiracy and so on. Shortly ago, I had a nice conspiracy, and the Mongolians said they built the big wall to protect themselves from the Chinese. Interesting.
Yeah. Mongols were not able to invade India properly. Otherwise, this would have been... the people would be like Mongolian style only.
Kings from
India stopped them.
I heard a story that this Chinese wall is not that old as they tell us, that it was built way later. So I don't know.
Mao Zedong built it.
Most probably, yeah.
Mao Zedong.
The communists made it.
But I read yesterday something interesting that 800 years ago, the Chinese found already out that the Mongol warriors were so strong because they only ate meat and drank milk and had dairy products. And the Jurchen soldiers, you know, this is a kind of another tribe, they ate a lot of grain, bread and stuff like this. And they were weak, they got sick, they had bad teeth. And the Mongolians were always strong because they only eat meat.
Because they were not vegan and vegetarian.
Exactly. This is what it plays exactly into your...
In the Sikh religion, is there something you're not allowed to eat or something like that? Or
drink?
Yes. We have. Actually, cow meat is prohibited.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Cow is prohibited. And, mm-hmm. Rest you can eat, but there is a controversy. The people who are baptized, they don't eat meat.
Mm-hmm.
Any kind of meat.
Okay.
Even not egg. Even eggs are also
prohibited. Okay.
Okay. And also not fish or chicken. Nothing.
No meat.
No, okay.
Only they are pure vegetarians.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Actually, those who are baptized.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Otherwise, Sikhs eat, drink everything except cows. And halal is prohibited in our religion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Halal meat is prohibited.
Mm-hmm.
We eat jhatka meat. Jhatka means when a cow or when the goat is prohibited, we kill the goat in one blow only.
Yeah.
That is called jhatka.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like but with the Jewish, like kosher, yeah. Like that, kosher, like yeah. A special.
The knife needs to be clean and does not have dents.
That is a clean kill. And because in our religion, it is said that when you are killing some animal for your food, that animal should not,
suffer?
He should not suffer about her
death. Longer than necessary.
Longer, mm-hmm. Yes.
A clean kill.
It should be a clean kill.
Mm-hmm. That yeah. makes sense. It's respect to nature, respect to...
Yes. Because not to kill. Yeah. So we don't prefer brutalism.
Mm-hmm.
A person should not be brutal enough that we cut silt slowly and watch them dying for a long time.
I understand. Very good. Very nice. And how about alcohol? You drink alcohol or not?
Alcohol, yes. People here drink alcohol.
So, as a Sikh warrior, you can drink alcohol?
If I am not baptized.
Okay. The baptized ones are okay.
And what is the preferred alcohol they drink? Beer or wine or brandy? Or is there a special Indian?
Anything.
Is there a special Indian kind of drink?
Yes, there are a lot of Indian drinks, but they are very fast and not every person can digest it.
Okay.
Especially foreigners, they avoid to have this Indian kind of drinks.
Mm-hmm.
And how about drugs like cannabis or something like that? Are the Sikhs used to smoke?
Smoking is prohibited in our religion.
Mm-hmm.
Tobacco is hardly prohibited.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
No cigarettes,
mm-hmm.
no tobacco. Mm-hmm. It is if a person is having tobacco, he is not a true Sikh.
Okay. Also not the pipe or nothing?
Nothing, sir. It is very, very much prohibited.
Mm-hmm.
Tobacco, product, even a tobacco product, byproduct, mm-hmm. everything
is prohibited.
Okay, interesting.
No, that's fine by me. So I still could be a Sikh. It's fine.
But on the other hand, in India, a lot of smoking that ganja or how you call it, I don't know, that cannabis stuff.
Yes, there is.
But not the Sikh.
No, not Sikh.
Interesting.
Mm. Not Sikh.
So it's kind of logic. To me, that they are the better warriors than they are the ones that smoke weed. and the Sikhs don't smoke weed, so they are more powerful and more woke.
Maybe something is given by our gurus, these kind of learnings. So the mm-hmm. credit goes to them.
Mm-hmm.
They give such kind of teachings that... don't drink this, don't have this. So mm-hmm. it is, and otherwise it helps in your body also.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For a healthy body. Healthy body and mind.
Healthy body and mind, yeah. That makes sense.
It doesn't make you weak or dependent on such things.
Yeah. Very good. Then you look very healthy. May I ask, how old are you now? 40, what did you say, 46? 47,
sir.
47.
This month only, 1/3.
Okay, this month only. Okay. Nice.
Nice talking.
It's really nice. Thank you very much, Jasminda.
We learned a lot today. Thank you for your time, yes. Jasminda.
Danyavad.
I'm honored, sir.
Really appreciate
you. We are honored. Thank you very much. And we invite you again soon, if you don't mind, okay?
Sure. I'm always there for you, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. Viewers, for your time. If you have any questions to Jasminda, you can even comment in the comment section and we can ask him next time, or he is reading them and then he can answer them directly.
Yep.
Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Have a nice evening, everybody. Guys.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.